Chapter 3. Whatever Drew's intentions, he forgot my birthday. It fell on the second day of the con, and all the way through the panels, discussion groups, and demos, I kept a low-key lookout for a distracted assistant running my way with a last-minute bottle of champagne, or maybe a taxi pulling up with the man himself inside, mortified at his absent-mindedness, but ready to take me out to dinner. Sheepishly, I asked at the reception desk if there'd been any deliveries, and didn't let go of hope entirely until I got back to my room and checked behind the door for a card. For God's sake! I thumped down on the bed, minding, kicking myself for the weakness. I was 50, not 5. I thought about phoning him, giving him the torture treatment as he tried to work out why I'd called. No, business is fine. The hotel's fine too. No, there weren't any problems with the Smith Estate blueprints. No, I'm fine, Drew. Really. Then I had a worse idea still, and I chucked my mobile onto the other twin bed before I could go absolutely nuts and call my ex. Because all that had to be over. I'd made a bloody fool enough of myself over the last year, calling in at the Hampstead house at least twice as often as necessary to collect the last of my things. Melchior, though stiff with awkwardness, had never objected, and Sabrina had positively welcomed me, offering tea, grilling me on how the bathroom plumbing worked and where to find authentic panes for the conservatory. She'd eyed me cautiously, as if expecting me to burst into a jealous rage and stab her. But I'd only been hungry for a sight of my old world, my home. The visit shattered me, and Drew had begged me not to go there. And once the house was on the market, I'd managed to stop. I surveyed the artex'd ceiling. The hotel really was okay, although I'd definitely have partitioned off the balconies so people might actually use them. And I'd have put the service lifts into the core, not off in an annex, saving the housekeepers endless miles of trolley-pushing trek. I was an easy guest to please. I loved hotels, even tired 70s blocks like this. Living in Melchior's glittering world, where half a dozen students and highly strung conductors a day would rattle through our house, and storms of music and temper swept up and down the stairs at all hours, a night in a travel lodge honestly felt like a break. I'd been playing at being alone. Although Jess and I had done our best, the end had come quickly, and I'd guiltily camped out in my mum and dad's house for the month it had taken me to meet and move in with Melchior. I was living with Drew now. I'd never had a place of my own, and in my occasional trust house fort or premier inn, never anything fancier than that, not with civil service footing the bill. I'd played house, using up all the complimentary sachets, taking my tea mug back to bed with me in the mornings and self-consciously watching breakfast TV, an activity unheard of in our civilised Hampstead bedroom. Somehow, I'd lived half a century on Earth without experiencing loneliness. It all looked set to catch up on me now. Tonight, here, in this undifferentiated cell with its bland everyman luxuries, I curled up on the bed. I'd started to drink too much in Melchior's glittering world, so I'd made sure not to bring a bottle in my suitcase. And I knew better than to open the minibar in a place like this. £20 for a mouse piss sample of unidentifiable scotch. I could get myself back down to the lounge and mix with the other delegates. I could have a shower and go to bed. But for the love of God, it was only 9 p.m. The Edgware sky is still wide and alight with sunset. Shit. This was how it felt to have nothing. A freefall panic entered my guts. I lost a sense of Andrew at home with Vicky and the kids, of my friends, of my mum and dad rocking out their healthy 80s in Torquay. What if all these people, even Melchior, Sabrina, and unborn Minimel, had vanished, and I'd never see or touch any of them again? Looking back, I think I had some kind of panic attack. I'd been pushing aside the impact of divorce for so long that I'd started to think it would never hit, like one of those near-Earth objects in The New Scientist, hurtling by us in a cosmic game of pool. My ongoing failure to read the solicitor's papers was a shield, stretching across my hemisphere, ready to burn up all the incoming horrors to ash. But it hadn't fucking worked. My lungs had gone shallow. I tried to curl up. Then, in shame at the significance of that, I lurched out of the bed and stood up, gasping. The room's four walls beginning a blurry retreat. Somebody knocked at the door. I jolted, as if whoever it was had rapped his knuckles off my head. But my chest unlocked, and I got a breath. All right. Fine. 9:15 at night. Only 2.75 hours of my birthday left. But Drew was forgiven. I imagined him at the family dining table, smacking himself on the brow in dismay when he remembered. Shit! It's George's sodding birthday! And Vicky, horrified too, but more concerned about the kids. Andrew! Language! Forgive him. At this rate, I'd jump into his arms if I could reach him. The walls were still running away from me. I made a charge at the one straight ahead and caught up. Took a last-second pause to pull myself together and yanked the door wide. A stranger confronted me. Through glittering fog, I made out that he was 6 foot tall, with a beautiful cap of salt and pepper hair. That his eyes were brown, and their warm, flirtatious challenge changed as I watched to concern. I further noted that he was carrying chrysanthemums, favourites of mine, although Melchior dismissed them as common, grandmother's greenhouse. And that he was, far and away, the most gorgeous guy I had ever seen. But he wasn't my brother. Disappointment seared me. Sorry, I managed. You've got the wrong room. No, I haven't. Not if you're George Fenchurch. Even his voice was delicious. He sounded like a BBC newsreader who'd spent a lot of time in the north, long enough for his vowels to broaden, and an ordinary, absolute charm to suffuse his every word. I am, I said, my own voice scoured and raw. Who the hell are you? He set down his holdall, put the chrysanthemums into one arm, and held out an identity card in a slim leather sheath. A name I couldn't take in, a photo that just barely did him justice. Across the top, Silver Fox Escort Services. I'm your birthday present, he said. From your brother Drew. Bollocks. I'd had a guilty look at the Silver Fox site while Andrew had been with his clients that day. He couldn't possibly afford it. Well, it's your 50th, isn't it? He wanted to treat you. George, you don't look well, if you don't mind my saying so. What's wrong? I didn't faint dead away into his arms. I came perilously close, though. He had to drop his flowers in order to hoist me back into the room. The next thing I knew, I was flat on my back on one of the twin beds. I must have put my hands over my eyes, in what desperate last gesture of self-defence I didn't know. When I brought them down, the blinding glitter had vanished from the air. The chrysanthemums were upright, floating bronze and orange globes, magnificent, in a vase from which the dusty fake lilies had been evicted. The kettle was on, and the Silver Fox, my birthday present, was sitting on the twin bed opposite, the phone in his hand. He looked up inquiringly. "Who should I call?" he asked. "A room service, or 999? "What?" I shoved gracelessly up onto one elbow. "Neither. Why?" "I was afraid you were having a heart attack, but I think you just need some food." No, I didn't. I'd been eating with the delegates all day, hadn't I? When I came to think about it, though, I'd let the various trays go by me, untouched. I'd been in a proper, stupid, worked-up state about this damn birthday, and I was glad it was over, all but 2.5 hours of it. All I needed to do was call Andrew, get this bizarre gift of his cancelled and sent back home. I can't have you. You're bloody lovely, I'm sure, but I can't. What goes best with a cup of tea and some champagne, do you reckon? Ham and cheese toasted, or the chicken Kiev and chips? The in-house menu didn't run to much. Melchior would have had a fit. My guts gave a hungry yowl at the idea of toasted cheese, and the Silver Fox grinned. Distractedly, I noticed that he had one slightly crooked tooth, that he was my age at least. If Drew had sent me some kid with flashing orthodonty, I'd already have died of embarrassment. "I guess the toasted sarnie," he said. "We'll get chips with it. Now, just so you know the arrangements, your brother's paid for me outright all night, and I cover all my own expenses. So this is on me. And stop it, I grated. Stop telling me your details. This isn't going to happen. Andrew's made a mistake. He sat back, cradling the receiver. Christ, did he have to have lovely hands too? Okay, well, that happens. Sometimes the client's married, and a night on the tiles doesn't suit him, even if he might have given his friends the impression it would. Sometimes he's not gay. Or he just doesn't fancy me. Oh, I said helplessly, unstoppably. I can't imagine that last one happening at all. We sat and looked at each other. His sweet smile began again. I tell you what, he said. Let's just start with the room service, Sarnies, and we can take it from there.
No, there'll be no taking anything.
You seem like a nice guy, Mr. Silver, believe it or not. It's not my agency, just a coincidence. Aaron Silver. My regulars call me Silver or Sil.
Christ. He had regulars?
Somewhere there existed men, women too, with the means to call up a vision like this whenever they wanted him. Not on a once-in-a-lifetime footing like mine. What was I thinking? No, not even once-in-a-lifetime. You're not listening to me. You've got to go away. In this particular concrete block hotel, you didn't speak to someone on the desk to order up your food. You just punched numbers into the phone. Aaron Silver calmly finished doing so, then hung up. Do you feel like telling me what the problem is? Are you worried about your brother? None of his business. Of course I am, I burst out nonetheless. He must have gone nuts. It's taken him every penny he's got to keep his architect's practice up and running. And there's no way. He told me all about that. He'd just made a really good deal with a new client, he said, so he could splash out. Is that not true? Oh my God. That would be Andrew, all right, phoning to book an appointment and regaling whoever answered with every detail of his life and circumstance. Yes, it's true. He still shouldn't have done this. As in, somebody gives you a present and you say, oh, you shouldn't have, before graciously damn well accepting, no. What is it then, George? When he used my first name, a shiver went down my spine. I don't know. Is it because of what I am? I wasn't even sure what that meant. I was feeling better now, so I got up and went to switch off the kettle, which didn't have an automatic cut-off and was filling the room with steam. I got two tea bags out of their little plastic tray and put them into mugs on sheer autopilot. I don't know what you are, apart from a guy who won't take no for an answer. He chuckled. Not that. My job. Oh. I hadn't thought so, but maybe he was right. Sounds pathetic, like I'm making excuses or something, but... Okay, I haven't been with anyone like you before. An escort? He leaned back and took up an easy slouch against the headboard. For the first time, he looked like the job description, and I shivered again. Some guys would call me a rent boy, a whore. Is that the problem? Bloody hell, no. I had my Guardian reader's enlightened view of sex workers. I mean, I know it's a dangerous trade, for women especially. I know it's not properly regulated, and I think it should be, to be honest. I crushed one of the tea bags so hard against the side of the mug that it burst. Shit. I'd have that one. Least I could do was offer my rent boy a decent cup of tea. I know you get exposed to all kinds of things, and there's not much legal protection. I think that's wrong. I must have misheard him. A faint, barely audible, bless you, George. You're right in general, he said more clearly. It is dangerous, much more so for women. But suppose the whore's a guy, and he can take care of himself, enjoys his work, and makes a fortune doing it. Why the hell was he asking me? I handed him his mug at arm's length, sat down cautiously opposite him. Well, that's nice for him, in that case, I suppose. Then your problems with the names. I was about to deny that too. Not naturally the most open-minded of men. I'd worked hard, until the language and behaviour of Melchior's crowd had barely caused me to bat an eyelid. But he was right. Yes, I said with sudden fervour. Don't call yourself a whore.
Well, it's a horrible thing to call a woman, but...
It's a horrible thing to call anyone.
Can you think of a good one for someone in my trade? Good and accurate, I mean, not escort, as if we're going to walk arm in arm to some gentleman's club and have dinner and a slow waltz together. Prostitutes, highly pejorative. Sex workers, fine, though it sounds a bit, well, industrial, like I've come to unblock your pipes. Rent boy doesn't really work for somebody in his 50s and...
Okay, okay, I waved him to silence. He was going to make me laugh if I wasn't careful, and I didn't want that. I take your point, but there's a big difference between, I don't know, struggling to find a term for something and deliberately choosing the worst one you can. Gently, holding my gaze, he put the toe of one exquisite leather shoe to the heel of the other. I was about to beg him, order him, not to take his shoes off, because he wasn't damn well staying. Then I realised he just wanted to put his feet up on the bed. I approved of people who took off their shoes to do that, even on 3-star bed linen.
All right, George, he said delicately. For the purposes of this evening, we won't call me a whore.
He took a sip of his tea, not for a second taking his eyes off mine.
Unless you change your mind later.
I won't.
You'd be surprised how some of my clients do, in the heat of the moment. You whore, Silver, you whore.
Oh, what the hell hit me?
Next day, every day for about a fortnight after that, I would stop at some point, stare at myself in the mirror, and silently demand what the blazing fuck had leapt up in me between one heartbeat and the next. Because I fell on him. Not, thank God, tangled laces or sudden vertigo. Though either of those things would have saved my scarlet reflected face. The silver fox stared at me. Half growled, half purred those dreadful words. And I pushed up off the bed, knocked my tea over with one foot, and fell on him, like a lion on a bloody antelope. His empty mug went flying, and the air left his lungs in a whoosh. He burst into startled laughter and caught me, flipped me over in the narrow bed so he was on top. Just barely saved me from tumbling out the other side.
Wow, he gasped, pinning me. I've got you, it's all right.
It's bloody not, I writhed. But all that did was ram my hard-on up against his. What am I doing?
Unwrapping your present, looks like. He grinned down at me. I didn't think you would.
I did want to unwrap him. My heart was pounding so hard from my predatory leap that I could hardly start the job.
Tie or zip?
I wanted to kiss his tanned, corded neck almost as much as I wanted his cock in my hand.
God, he's big, and he really wants me.
I flashed back to our conversation, not 5 minutes ago, sitting calmly knee to knee on the twin beds, about women in his trade, who for all the dangers could fake it. He couldn't. Maybe he just wanted everyone. He'd be useless in his job if he couldn't turn it on. Maybe he went somewhere else in his head, saw someone else, the way Melchior, drunk, had told me he did before our separation. I have to think about Sabrina to get it on with you, George. So it's no good, is it? Not any more. My erection died. Not a graceful wilt, but a sudden total fail. The loss of it made me feel sick, castrated, because every other part of me was aching with want for this man. Then shame hit, and I struggled out from under him, trying to turn away. He grabbed me, not gently, with a solid power that made me ache harder still. He got hold of my left hand and ran the pad of one warm thumb across my knuckles. Still married. The only evidence left was the ring mark, a pale ghost on my skin. No one had noticed in the winter, but now, at the end of a sunny May, it was standing out like a bloody wail for help. Sometimes I borrowed a ring of Drew's, but for this trip I'd forgotten. No, I said. Not for over a year now, or I wouldn't be doing this. Drew would never have... I don't mean here.
The thumb caressed my fingers again, and then Silver patted my chest just over the heart. I mean here. The swiftest ruffle of the hair at the top of my skull. And here. Nonsense. My head and my heart were as single as the rest of me. I just wished my dick would get the message too, because I was mortified now, lying here frustrated and flaccid after my tigerish leap. I struggled over onto my back, and he let me, somehow without lifting off me his muscular, anchoring weight. "Look, Mr. Silver," I said. "I was married for 20 years to a guy called Melchior Heath. You'll have heard of him. He's a concert pianist. A couple of years back, he decided he wanted to be a dad, and he met Sabrina Dalgleish, the model. You'll have heard of her too, or seen her on the front of Vogue. We separated amicably. She's about to have his baby and... I've got the divorce papers over there on my computer, all ready to read through and sign. That's what I was going to do when you showed up." "She's about to have the kid? You left it until the 11th hour, didn't you?" I should have shoved him off me. "The lawyers took ages. I don't have to justify myself to you." "No, you don't. So whatever's going on here, given that I am gay and I do fancy you, it's not that." God, how he coloured to hear himself admired. That was some trick of the trade, wasn't it? That kind of freshness. If I couldn't keep my flag up for him, other demons were alive and well in me. I almost asked him if he blushed for all the boys. Before I could open my mouth, he made himself comfortable on my chest, rested his chin on the back of one hand, and asked, looking me straight in the face, "Do you suffer from impotence, then?" As if he'd been my doctor or a shrink. For a moment, outrage choked me. And then, possibly because of his sheer cheek, the one-off novelty of our relationship, the fact that I'd never see him again, I found myself talking. "Melchior's 10 years younger than I am. We were fine until I found out the grass was looking greener to him somewhere else." "Was he unfaithful?" "Not physically. I wouldn't have shared a bed with him. Wouldn't have even tried to get him back. But I thought, as long as he was still living at home with me, still, sitting opposite me at the bloody breakfast table, we stood a chance. But I couldn't fuck him." I'm not surprised. He was squashing the breath out of me. Melchior had never weighed more than a cat wet through. I allowed myself a groan. "Aren't you?" "I was. I'd never had any problems before. And I just thought, well, I'm hitting that age. I'd love to blame it on my ex, but here I am with you, limp as a boiled carrot." I clamped a hand across my eyes. "Fuck it." His weight disappeared. I hadn't realised the comfort of it until it was gone, and I kept my hand in place so I wouldn't have to see him straighten his clothes and start to get ready to leave. The bed creaked as he stood up. Deprived of vision, I listened acutely to his progress across the room. 4 padding footsteps, then the click of a catch. Casting back over my half-hour's knowledge of him, of Silver, what he carried and did and owned, I remembered a soft leather hold-all. He said, and his voice was soft leather too, comforting with that enthralling edge of tough, "I've got just the thing you need." "Oh shit. What? A packet of Viagra? Some arcane bloody device for reviving the libido of aging men? Whips? Feathers? Chains?" The silence of the room became taut, and from his end it was richly laced with amusement. Somehow I'd already learned his breathing well enough to know when he was trying not to laugh. I opened my eyes. The room service sandwiches arrived. We ate them, and then I sat with my escort on the hotel room sofa, a coffee table in front of us, and played chess until the small hours. I'd never seen a set like his. He said he'd had it made for him in Russia, where traditional elk hunters carved both board and pieces out of horn the beasts had shed. Some tiny warning glimmer in his eyes prevented me from asking if trade took him out that far. His reputation international. And then he explained that the dark pieces were made from freshly shed horn, and the lighter ones from weathered fines. The board was large enough for a comfortable spread, but he'd unfolded it from a palm-sized velvet pouch. The squat, determined-looking queen and all her fellow courtiers and pawns had emerged from within the board's padded folds. I'd thought I was too old to go falling in love with objects. Had lost that nest-lining, home-making impulse long ago. But I really did covet this. Half hypnotised by the charm of the carving, I went to work with my best game. He beat me the first time. It wasn't like being trounced by Melchior. Silver made faces, growled, flung himself back on the sofa, yelped like the fox he was at a smart move from either of us. He left me all the time in the world to work out my next gambit. How Melchior would chivy me, pace restlessly around the room. I'd never really minded, that was just his style, and sometimes the 10 years between us had made a difference. In some ways, I thought of him as young, made allowances. Nothing wrong with that, I reflected, digging my bare toes into the carpet while I dreamed up an ambush of Silver's remaining bishop. It was just nice to be with someone who was playing for fun. Check, I said in surprise, palming the bishop in pleasure at its smooth, polished weight in my hands. Oh look, Sil, it's mate. What? He leaned in. He'd taken off his jacket and loosened his tie, but otherwise was fully dressed and unalarming, as if he'd come here tonight with no other object than to play chess with me. It is not. And there was a thought. Did Andrew tell you I liked this? Who? He was still examining the board for a way out. Oh, your brother. Are you wondering why I bought the set? A little. I always carry it around. You never can tell who'd care for a game. A strand of hair fell forward over his brow, disturbing the neat cut, and I couldn't help but think I'd never seen a lovelier sight across a chessboard. What if I knight to Queen's Bishop 3? Oh no, you've got me blocked. It is, mate, you sod. I leaned back, folding my arms. Laughter shook me. I'd called him Sil, and he hadn't batted an eyelid. He'd called me, you sod, as if we'd known each other for years. He'd kept me quietly topped up with champagne from the bottle he'd bought with him, not the minibar, and some of its shifting sparkle had got into my blood. Do you want to go again? If you like. He would have too. If I'd wanted, he'd have sat here with me all night. If I wanted something more, his steady gaze on mine told me I could have it. I'd won, but I laid my king down for him. He smiled at the gesture. What does that mean? My brother was right after all. About what? About what I might like for my birthday. He lifted the coffee table a couple of inches forward, so it was no longer a barricade between us, and the whole little elk-horn army had to stand down. I'd read somewhere, or seen it in a movie, that men and women in his line of work didn't kiss, that they kept that last intimacy for girlfriends or boyfriends at home. I gave a twitch as he leaned in. What's wrong? He asked. Don't you like to? I thought you wouldn't. Again, that deep glimmer. Not a warning this time, not at all. I'll tell you a trade secret. I avoid it if I can. Sometimes it's too much, you know, even in my game, to be up that close to a stranger. I feel different with you. I bet you say that to all the boys. The cynical thought flickered past me and dissolved. If he was flattering me, I was flattered. If he was turning on the charm, I was charmed beyond measure, melting, blown away. For the record, he continued, laying a hand on my face and drawing me in, you're the only John who's ever given enough of a shit about me to ask. I closed my eyes. God, he was right about the nose-to-nose too much of kissing a stranger. I'd last done it 20-odd years ago. With Melchior, I knew every inch of the terrain, just as he'd known mine, and we'd forgiven each other the occasional late-night curry or lunchtime tzatziki. There'd been onions in the room service toasties, I remembered, and almost jolted back out of Silver's embrace until I recalled that he'd eaten them too. Then his mouth met mine and everything fell away. He was tender as sunlight. He eased me against the back of the sofa. My hands flailed uselessly at the shuddery pleasure of his kiss, which was bold now we'd cleared the preliminaries, open, seeking. Then I seized his shoulders and hung on. Better, he gasped. pulling back for an instant, dropping an assessing touch down between my legs. Feels more convincing, built to last. Silver, don't stop. I want... What? I'm all yours, all night. So what's it to be? A roll around here or back to bed where I can fuck you? Sweet Jesus. I nearly had an equal and opposite reaction to my former wilt. I clutched him, breathing back down off the edge of a desperate premature cum. The bed, he said, not as a question, a devil's smile lighting his face.
Look at you, shocked to the bone at a bit of bad language, and you'll cock up like the Cornhill maypole.
I bet Melchior never says fuck. Only when he stubbed his toe, or found a critical concert review in the Times. Sexual connotations had gone out of the word for us long ago, and Melchior was civilised, as I was. We didn't speak to each other like that. Silver said it like a delicate punch to the ribs. Heat was flickering over my skin, a readiness for action I hadn't felt in years.
No, he doesn't,
I said roughly, my voice crackling like dry wood.
Come on then, for God's sake do it, fuck me.
He steered me across the room. He put his hand in the small of my back, which somehow felt more devastating than his tongue had in my mouth. By the bed, he dropped his grip to my belt and drew me to a halt.
You started unwrapping me a few hours ago. Do you want to finish the job?
I did. I didn't want another tussle with collars, cuffs, ties, and zips in the bed. Swallowing hard, I unfastened his shirt and pushed it off his shoulders, catching a gleam of his smile as he put out his arms like a kid and let me do the whole job unaided. His chest was broad, furred with salt and pepper wings that diminished to a line down his belly, rich against his even tan. I guessed that he spent a fair amount of time in the gym. He was elegantly ripped, not too much muscle development, everything compact and taut.
Lovely,
I said helplessly, suddenly aware of my muffin tops. The year of comfort eating I'd spent in my sister-in-law's hospitable kitchen.
Silver, are you sure? About what? That you want to fuck someone like me?
He didn't answer. Instead, he put my hands on the buckle of his belt, leaned back a little, and shivered as I undid it. I pushed his trousers and boxers down to his hips, and he laid one hand on my shoulder to balance himself, while we parted him from his shoes and socks. I suppose I could have pretended to be looking elsewhere than the jut of his cock, but there wasn't much point in that now, and I frankly stared as he stepped free of the last of his clothes and stood in front of me.
Now you, he said.
But before I could get started on my shirt, the one I suddenly hated for being too tight in the armpit and girth, the one I wore for places like this, where no one would look at me twice, he took my hand.
Wait a minute. Touch me.
He meant his cock. Paralysis struck and he guided me, drawing my hand in until I had to unclench my fist and take hold of him.
Ah,
he was strong and straight, hot with beating blood beneath his fine skin. I ran my palm downward, caressed and cupped his balls, and he pushed his hips forward, letting go of a fractured breath.
That feels so good. I can hardly wait for you.
Between us, we skinned me out of the wretched business suit that I'd festered in all day, which had almost invaded my flesh like an ingrown toenail, because I wouldn't get measured up for a new one, no matter how much Drew had begged. Because he'd offered to pay for it too, and that was unbearable. Discarded husbands should lose weight, not give themselves and their expanding waistlines a break by buying new. I almost cried out of the cruel stupidity of my own heartbroken thinking, which I'd never even realised until now.
You wouldn't treat anyone else this way, Drew had said, watching me wear out and grow out of the things I'd bought from home. I know he left you, but he didn't leave you poor. What about all your nice stuff in storage?
Silver dropped to his knees. He kissed the place where my belt had welted the top of my hip, and then he kissed my belly, one sensitive inch below the navel.
You, he said, are bloody delicious. Now, do you want me? Or, since it's your birthday night, would you rather lie back and be done?
I turned his wrist so I could glance at his watch. It's after 2 in the morning, a bit late for birthday treats.
Still,
I ached to get fucked. I'd had a lonely year of it. Taking the lead with Silver would be hot as hell, and I did like to be on top, but I longed to be in his hands. I didn't have to tell him. He read it all in one smiling look. He let me help him up. He took a moment to fold back the quilt, to reach into his holdall for condoms and lube. "Spread that out," he said, handing me a towel. "I've worked in housekeeping. No need for me to make things any worse." Oh, God, the trick towel. My mind supplied from some long-gone 80s porn movie. I pushed the stupid thought out of my head. Names, labels, mud to sling. None of it mattered. I was about to hit the sack with someone who cared about the people who worked here, and that was sexy as fuck. In the morning, I'd tell him about my idea for the service lift redesign. He pushed me down onto the bed, and I forgot about everything. There wasn't much space for rolling around. I didn't need any. I'd found out where I wanted to be, and he pinned me there, kissing my nape and shoulders. I stifled a groan in the pillow. His fingers probed the crack of my backside, pushed down and in, spreading lube. The smell of industrial laundry powder filled my head, combining with the heat of our bodies to a weird aphrodisiac, and I wished I'd had a shower, then was glad that I hadn't, that both of us were warmly and truthfully here. He thrust at me, one long penetrative push. He was big, and I was out of practice. The cry he shook from me rattled the walls. "God!" he gasped against my ear, holding me. "That wasn't very..." I just about had one word left in me. "What?" "Professional. Sorry, George." Burying my face in the crook of his elbow, I shook my head. I hoped he'd understand from the mute gesture that I didn't care. That I liked him just where he was. That my insides were sorting themselves out around that initial balls-deep shove, and I felt fine. That even if this, the lapse of control, like his blushes and his readiness to kiss, was all part of his package, I would take it. I pushed back against him, raising my rump, shaped my throat and breath for one more word. "Please." He began to move, gently at first, as if to make up for the bumpy start. And then when I grabbed the pillow, reading my urgency and settling down to a hard beat, he tucked a hand under me, found my rigid cock and took hold. His grip was firm enough to restrain my first surging impulse to come. And after that, I found my long-married man's self-control, breathed deep, and set to work to make it last for both of us. Silver wasn't a guy to keep banging away in there after his lover was done. I spread for him, letting him in deeper still. His rhythm quickened. I shoved the pillows aside, lay flat and dug my fingers under the headboard. A glance across my shoulder showed him up on rigid arms, flushed and serenely wild. So bloody lovely I wanted to die of it. "Come on," he gasped. "You don't have to hang on for me. I'm there." I dropped my head with a gutted little moan. Just for a second the handbrake was hard to release. I'd have held on for him till dawn if he'd asked. Then, thank God, forces of joy and release came thundering up the beach for me, out of dusty, dull day-to-day prisons I'd made for them, and I scrambled halfway onto my hands and knees to meet his climax. Came so fucking hard myself that shadows grazed my vision, and whatever thing within myself I thought of as me, as George, tried to tear loose of its roots and escape. I roared like a bloody bull, once, twice, again, the third sound breaking up into rags. I tasted blood, thumped back down onto the mattress, still spilling into Silver's tight clenched hand. For a long time I lay there, flat out. My breath came and went in noisy efforts that would turn into sobs if I let them. I couldn't. Couldn't bear for him to think I hadn't enjoyed it, or had enjoyed it so impossibly way too much that I'd fallen in love with my birthday present and couldn't imagine for the life of me when or how I'd ever feel like this again. "George," he said uncertainly. When I didn't answer, pulled out of me, making me grunt in discomfort. "Haven't killed you, have I?" Not quite. I struggled over onto my back, and he reached underneath me deftly to fold up the towel, making things nice for the client afterwards, I supposed. But he didn't look businesslike. He was still trying to catch his breath. His hand shook slightly as he dropped the towel back into the holdall. I pushed up to rest against the headboard. Are you okay?
Do you know, I think you might have killed me a bit.
Oh, God, was I awful?
He chuckled.
You idiot.
No, I just don't normally get into it that much with a...
I didn't mind what he called me. I tried to sound urbane.
A John? With anyone, I was going to say. So come on, you, what do you like to do after a fuck? Sleep? Talk? Straight in the shower?
Something was wrong. He was avoiding my eyes, and the tremor hadn't quite left his hand. I definitely don't want the shower, I said, scrunching over so that he could sit beside me and share the headboard. Don't want you to wash you off me just yet.
And what the hell do people generally talk about afterwards?
Oh, you'd be surprised.
The married ones usually have a good blast of guilt after we're done, and I hear all about their lives and partners.
I must be less married than you thought, then. I feel all kinds of things right now, but guilt is not one of them.
That's good. A huge yawn shook him.
And some guys just want to sleep.
I bet. Must be a busy life.
Yeah. I was up until all hours last night with a merry widow in Kensington. I think she must have screwed her first three husbands to death. Still, I'm fine. We can do anything you want.
I put an arm around his shoulder. He twitched in surprise, then leaned against me.
Let's give it half an hour or so, I said.
See if the dead can rise again.
Oh, you'll be up and at it before then, I bet, hot shot.
He laid his head on my shoulder. He was wiped out. Something had drained him. Not me. Not the Kensington widow. A tiredness deeper than that. My mind threw a couple of lurid scenarios at me. HIV. A brutal pimp behind the elegant silver fox logo. Quickly, I dismissed these thoughts so that he wouldn't hear the increased beat of my heart. I rested my chin on the top of his skull and listened to his breathing deepen into sleep.